Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 3, Text 46. Vedaktam eva kurvano
Vedaktam eva kurvano
Nishango pitamishvare
Nishango pitamishvare
Naishkaramyam labhate siddhim
Naishkaramyam labhate siddhim
Lochanata phalasrutihi
Lochanata phalasrutihi
Veda uktam
Veda uktam.
The regulated activities described by the Vedas. Eva.
Eva.
Certainly.
Kurvanaha.
Performing.
Nishangaha.
Without attachment. Apitam.
Offered.
Ishvare.
Ishvare.
To the Supreme Lord.
To the Supreme Lord.
Naishkaramyam.
Naishkaramyam.
Where's the spelling stuff here? In the word for word, it's got Naishkaramyam, but that's not right. It's Naishkaramyam. Of liberation from material work and its reactions. What was wrong with it?
The mute button was turned.
The mute button was turned on, yes. I thought it might be something like that, but I'm not sufficiently familiar with it. Labhate, one achieves.
Siddhi,
the perfection.
Lokjanata,
for the purpose of giving encouragement. Phalasruttihi, the promises of material results. Given in the Vedic scriptures. By executing without attachment the regulated activities prescribed in the Vedas, offering results of such work to the Supreme Lord, one attains the perfection of freedom from the bondage of material work. The material fruitive results offered in the revealed scriptures are not the actual goal of Vedic knowledge, but are meant for stimulating the interest of the performer. Purport: human life is an opportunity offered by the laws of nature to the conditioned soul so that he may understand his eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Unfortunately, even in the human form of life, most living entities remain addicted to improving the standard of animal activities, namely eating, sleeping, defending and mating. Almost no one is interested in the actual success of life, Krishna consciousness. Sodavya Dini Rajendra Rinam Santi Sahasra Saha Apasyatam Atmatattvam Griheshu Grihamedinam. Those persons who are materially engrossed, being blind to the knowledge of ultimate truth, have many subject matters for hearing in human society, O Emperor. Who's winning the cricket? How many people got blown up in Mumbai, etc. It is stated, Parama Karuniko Vedaha. Vedic knowledge is supremely merciful because it engages the animalistic human beings in the gradual process of purification that culminates in full consciousness of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is confirmed by the Lord Himself in Bhagavad Gita. The majority of human beings are not able to suddenly give up material sense gratification, even though they understand from Vedic literature that such sense gratification causes a pernicious future effect. We've practically experienced in the Western countries that when the government informed the citizens that smoking cigarettes causes lung cancer, most people were unable to give up their smoking habit. Therefore, the Vedic literature prescribes a gradual process of purification in which the conditioned soul learns to offer the results of his material activities to the Supreme Lord They're spiritualizing those activities. Not possible to spiritualize smoking, though. Therefore, the Vedic literature. Material sense gratification is based on two organs, namely the tongue for tasting and the genitals for sex life. By offering palatable food to the deity of Krishna and then enjoying the remnants as Krishna prasadam, and by accepting the rules and regulations for Vedic household life and beginning as Krishna conscious children, one can gradually bring the full range of material activities to the platform of pure devotional service. By offering the fruits of one's ordinary activities to the Supreme Lord, one gradually understands that the Lord himself and not material sense gratification is the actual goal of life. Lord Krishna warns in Bhagavad Gita that if people are prematurely encouraged to give up household life or the sumptuous remnants of the Lord's prasadam, such artificial renunciation will have the opposite effect. There is a class of duplicitous men who misunderstand the transcendental purpose of the Vedas. I falsely claim that material purity results such as promotion to heaven, which is offered in the Agni Shtoma sacrifice, constitute the ultimate goal of the Vedas. Such foolish men have been described by Lord Krishna. Nyamimam uspitam vacham pravadan jyavi pastitaha veda vada ratha parta nanyat astiti vadinaha kama mana svarga pada janma karma phala pranam kriya vishesha bahulam loka ishvari gatim prati. Manas more knowledge very much attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various fruitive activities for elevation to heavenly planets, result of good birth, power and so forth. Being desirous of sense gratification and opulent life, they say that there is nothing more than this. I wrote here chapter 2, text 42-43. To refute such a foolish understanding of the Vedic purpose, this verse uses the word nishangaha, which means without attachment to material results. The actual purpose of the Vedas is arpitam ishvare, to offer everything to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The result is siddhim, or the perfection of life, Krishna consciousness. The words rochanarta tala sruttihi clearly indicate that the fruitive results promised in the Vedic literature are meant to stimulate a materialistic person to have faith in the Vedic injunctions. The example is given that a child may be offered candy covered medicine. Now, if you were here on Friday, this would be very familiar. It's repeated. Same thing being repeated. The child becomes enthusiastic to take the medicine because of the candy coating, whereas a mature person will be enthusiastic to take the medicine itself, knowing that such medicine is meant for his real self-interest. The mature platform of Vedic understanding is mentioned in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.4.22. Tam itam vedanuvachanena brahmana vividishanti brahmacharyena tapasa svadaya jagin ana shakena cha. By the teaching of the Vedas and by celibacy, penances, faith and controlled eating, great brahmanas came to know the Supreme. The Supreme is Krishna, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita. Although the prescribed rituals of the Vedas may sometimes resemble material fruitive work, the activity is spiritualized because the result is offered to the Supreme. Candy-covered medicine and ordinary candy may appear or taste the same, but the candy-covered medicine has a therapeutic effect not found in ordinary candy. Similarly, the words Naishkaramyam Labhadesh Sihim in this verse indicate that a faithful follower of the Vedic injunctions will gradually be promoted to the highest perfection of life, pure love of Godhead, as stated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Prema Pumato Mahan. Om Agyana Timiram Dasya Tinanjana Salakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jaina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Bhaktis Prabhavantikam Mukam Karoti Vatanam Pangum Nankayate Gure Yakripa Kamaham Bhante Shri Guru Dinatarinam. Ordinarily, our activities become a source of distress. Everybody acts in a way that they hope will make them happy. But in a state of ignorance, they actually perform activities which bring them distress. This is the nature of material work, material existence. We think we're going to be happy, but we end up being situated in a distressful condition. Basically because we're in ignorance. We're not aware of, and it's described in the Bhagavad Gita, not aware of what is to be done and what is not to be done. So, education is required, basically. We need education. We need good instruction. So that good instruction comes in the form of the Vedas, Veda Uktam, as we discussed yesterday. That which is stated by the Vedas is meant for our education. And that education means elevation. out of ignorance, tamasi ma jyoti gama. Come out of ignorance and into the light. So the Vedas are meant to shine some light on our understanding of how we should behave. Now, most people are attached to material enjoyment. Who prefers suffering over enjoyment? Anybody like to raise your hands? No, we all want enjoyment. But why do we have suffering? We want enjoyment, but how come we're suffering? And it is exactly for this reason, that we don't know what we're doing. And activities that we think will bring us happiness ultimately bring us distress. This is why sometimes we find in the Vedic injunctions, rules and regulations, guidelines, and so forth, that we're not very enthusiastic to follow because initially it looks like it's going to cause us some distress or some inconvenience or some suffering. But actually, the rules and regulations of the scriptures, the Vedas, even though initially they may bring about some inconvenience for us, how did you know that his mum came in? It's pretty amazing, isn't it? Even though they may cause us some initial inconvenience, they're actually designed to bring about the greatest benefit. And of course, you know, that's the whole reason for approaching a spiritual master, is to find out what activities will bring about the greatest benefit. Shreya Uttamam. And of course that's what the Vedas will lead us towards. And so this example is given in not yesterday's verse but the verse before, that a parent will encourage the child to have some candy. But before you have the candy, first of all you have to take your medicine. Right? It appears to the child as if the goal is to have the candy. But actually the real purpose is to take the medicine. So similarly in the Vedic injunctions we find elevation of the heavenly planets, birth in good family, an opportunity to become well educated, opportunities to become powerful and influential are offered as enticements to perform the sacrifices or the austerities that are recommended by the Vedas. The real purpose of the Vedas is to teach us the benefit of sacrifice. That's the real purpose. Yet for those who are not purified but are materially motivated, then material goals are offered as, what should we say, enticements. The real purpose is to engage in the purificatory activities that come as a result of performing sacrifice. So as is mentioned, most of the sacrifices are meant to be performed with the goal of pleasing Vishnu, even though there may be some material encouragement. And so that's mentioned here. The material fruitive results offered in the revealed scriptures are not the actual goal of Vedic knowledge, but are meant for stimulating the interest of the performer. And of course, as is mentioned here, Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita actually these benefits are not the real benefits at all, because they're all limited and temporary. Right? The real benefit of studying the Vedas is ultimately to come to this point, to know Krishna. So that's mentioned here, Vidaischa Savayanaham Eva Vidyaha. Real purpose. So, one who performs regulated activities, and that's the sacrifice. You know, the tendency of the living entity is to live in a unfettered way, in a profligate, is that the right word? Profligate way, which means just do what you like. And the Vedas curb that tendency, because that tendency is there as the enjoying propensity. If we pursue our enjoying propensity, then what happens? We lose the opportunity to uncover or reveal our original spiritual identity. And one just gets caught up in the mind and the senses and sense gratification, basically. And then as a consequence, what happens is that one just becomes more firmly rooted in this conception that I am the body. But the whole purpose of the Vedic culture or the Vedic system is to regulate one's sense gratification. Just push the door. Just push it. By following the rules and regulations in the Shastra, one regulates one's lifestyle. And then, even though there may initially be some inclination for sense gratification, gradually that becomes purified. Especially even in devotional service, akama, savakama, vamokshakama, udharati. You may be desiring all sense gratification, you may be desiring no sense gratification, you may be desiring liberation, it doesn't matter. Tivrena bhakti yogena, if you engage in a process of devotional service, then the activity of devotional service, when it is performed in a very focused way, brings one to the point of fulfilling all of these desires, satisfying one completely, and of course the added benefit is that one fulfills the real purpose of existence, which is to understand our actual identity, spiritual identity. And that identity means basically understanding our relationship with Krishna. So, real human life, if you like, means coming to this, coming to the platform of following the Vedic injunctions. You know, we can see in modern society that basically there's no consideration of any Vedic injunction. And so, you know, the Shastra then describes such a society as basically just a polished version of animals. Huh? Drives around in a Mercedes, right, or a Lexus, or whatever is considered to be very elevated. But basically it's just chasing the senses. That Prabhupada says, you know, instead of four legs, got four wheels. But what happens? The dog's got a collar on, if he's got a master, if he's lucky. And the man driving in a motor car has got his collar on, shirt and tie, and he thinks he's very civilised, but basically the behaviour is not much better than the animals. So, you know, Prabhupada would say, you know, just a royal edition of the animals. Because there's no regulation that brings about purification. There may be regulation, you know, go to work. And you know, there actually is regulation in modern existence, if you like. But it's regulation dictated by the modes of passion and the modes of ignorance. And all it means is more entanglement. Whereas the prescriptions that are given within the Vedic culture, or the Vedic system, are such that there's worship of God, plainly put. There's a recognition of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And there's a recognition of an ordered and structured lifestyle wherein all of our activities have some connection to the Supreme. Modern culture just doesn't even accept that God exists, and even though there may be some order or structure, basically that order and structure is the order and structure of the demons. And it doesn't actually bring about, it doesn't bring with it any real advantage. So the focus of Vedic culture is to basically bring us to this point of self-realization, which is the real benefit of the human form of life. All of the other benefits that we might accrue are limited and temporary and will be taken away from us. At the time of death, everything is taken away. But not our spiritual advancement. Krishna mentions in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, Nihabhikrama nasos prajamayo navityate svalpamap yasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. So the material benefits that we get, we can amass a fortune, or you know, it's interesting, the government's encouraged everybody, put money into superannuation, right? But you know, with the crash of the financial markets, their superannuation, the previous year they think, yes, I have my superannuation, how wonderful. But now the superannuation has just shrunk by 30%. Right? Which is a good example of how these things are very, it's all just ephemeral. Limited and temporary. Because that doesn't mean that we shouldn't work for some material benefit. Because, you know, we need to clothe ourselves, we need to feed ourselves, we need to have a roof over our heads. But the Bhagavatam tells us we should use those things, not for sense gratification, but we should use those things for making spiritual advancement. That's the real... If we get some material benefit, then the material benefit should be utilised so that it helps us make spiritual progress. Then it's a real benefit for us. We get something that's tangible. But if we just put our efforts into making material advancement, and that's all we focus on, then at the end of life we won't make any spiritual advancement, and then all the material things that we work for, they're all taken away. So therefore, we have these regulations within the Vedas. Yes, do some material pursuit, but make sure at the same time you get some real, tangible, long-term benefits. Shreya Uttamam. It means the benefit that comes in the long run, in the long term. Uttamam means that which is transcendental. Right? Very important. So, in the beginning, to encourage people, you know, there is some offering of material benefit, because that's what people are attached to. People are attached to material benefit. And the Vedas encourage even pursuit of material benefits, but do this, do this, do this, do this. In other words, sacrifice the tendency for undisciplined, unself-controlled behaviour, for discipline and self-control, so that one gradually gets a taste for the performance of these austerities and becomes purified as a result. And as a result of that purification, then one gets the opportunity, one becomes eligible then, to take advantage of the real message of the Vedas. And as is mentioned here, as we discussed yesterday, you know, and the day before, taking of prasadam, for example. Eating is something that we all do. Everybody eats. And pretty much for the devotees, eating is a very integral part of existence. Very important, actually. You know, it's the one, what is it? Sarira avijaja. When I visit my parents, sometimes, you know, we're having a family gathering and my father says, why don't you say grace? You know, when my father says grace, what is it? Oh Lord, for what we are about to receive, make us truly thankful. That's it, that's grace. Pretty simple, really. And I say to my father, you know, if I'm to say grace, you have to sit still for 5 minutes. And then I have to explain it to you. And you may not like what you hear. But sharira avijaja, the body is a lump of ignorance. Avijaja, avijja, it's ignorance. Jatendriya tahika, the senses are a network of paths leading to death. Right? Do you think about that when you're singing sharira? When we're singing sharira avijaja, we don't think about what it means, we're just thinking, come on, let's have some shower. But it's actually a very heavy prayer when you meditate on the meaning of that first verse. And of all of the senses, the most voracious and uncontrollable is the tongue. Right? But Krishna is very kind. Krishna Bodha Doryamoy. Krishna is very kind. He gives us an opportunity to control the tongue. by eating prasadam. Jagyashishta. Jagyashishta shana shanto muchante sarvakil vishaya. Munjate te trikam papam yeta chantjapakaranat. The eating is a very good example. Everybody eats. So the devotees, when they eat, first of all, they offer everything to Krishna. So that then the remnants of what they've prepared become Jagyashishta. And that Jagyashishta has a special potency. It looks exactly like another meal that somebody else might prepare. It looks exactly the same. But the the content, the remnants of Jagyashishta, have great potency. And that's really, you know, when our activities are performed with this idea to please Krishna, yat karosi yat asnasi yat jahosi jatasi yat. That's what Krishna recommends. Patram pushtam phalam toyam yome bhakya prayachate. So, you know, when we're offering the results of our activities, when we're offering what we're giving away, when we're offering the food that we're preparing, then the end result is something very, very different. Even though it looks exactly the same as what the karmis are doing. Externally, ostensibly, it looks exactly the same. But because the mentality of the devotee is very, very different, then the end result becomes not entangling, but purifying, liberating actually. And, you know, that sacrifice, if you like, leads to basically transcendental knowledge. This is the message of the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. If you want transcendental knowledge, then basically you have to perform sacrifice. So, the devotees, eating as an example, you know, they perform it's a very simple sacrifice. You know, rather than preparing foodstuff with a mood of let me enjoy it, the mood is let first of all Krishna enjoy it. And it's not a big, you know, it's actually not a very big deal when you think about it. Making an offering. Although, it's a simple thing to do. Actually, it is a big deal because it's a complete change in mentality, complete change in understanding. You know, while I'm cooking for the pleasure of Krishna. Well, you know, inherent within that is something interesting when you think about it. That means God is a person and he likes to eat. Right? Which is a, you know, there's actually quite a lot that comes with just preparing an offering for Krishna. It means accepting that Krishna is a person. That God is a person, which is a highly elevated concept. But by the simple performance of that activity, a great benefit comes to the performer. Bunjate te tragam papam. By just taking those remnants, one becomes purified of the sinful activities that one's performed in the past. Prabhupada mentions, you know, if we take the remnants of sacrifice, sacrifice itself imbues those remnants with spiritual potency, which is actually able to purify the consciousness of the person who takes it. Very powerful. You know, the consciousness of the person that's cooking the food is critical, key to the effect of the, you know, what you take and the result of what you take. You know, if you the example that I give the school give school students, I say to them, how would you like it if you ate at McDonald's for every meal for every day of the week? And usually they go, ugh. Huh? That's probably something that none of you have ever done. I haven't done it. McDonald's was a creation after I became a devotee. So, never got the opportunity. But I remember when I was a kid, you know, we used to look forward to going to my grandma's for dinner. In fact, when I was somewhat estranged from my family, I, for some reason or other, it didn't matter what I did. My parents were aghast at many of the things that I did as a teenager or as a early, in my early 20s. But my grandma never ever took any notice of it. She always considered, for some reason, I was the favourite grandson. And it didn't matter what I did, but my grandma was always happy to see me. And I always used to like to go to my grandma's because she was a fantastic cook. And you know, usually I was down and out and I needed a good feed. So, and it struck me, you know, you could eat at a takeaway food joint, basically, and feel terrible. But if you went to grandma's, then you felt great. And you know, a lot of it was because grandma would put, you know, or mum, puts a lot of care and attention into what they prepare for the family. Whereas, you know, if it's just a quick takeaway, they just shove it together and here you go. There's no real meditation. And of course, you know, the meditation that the devotees put into cooking for Krishna, the more love and devotion, or the more intense the offering in one sense, then the greater potency there is in the prasada. Right? You know, I always get great pleasure out of seeing korma cook a feast. Even cooking with korma in the kitchen is pleasurable. Because he has great, you know, he likes to do everything nicely for Krishna's pleasure. And then, you know, when korma does the offering, he'll put the I haven't seen him do it for a long time because he hasn't put an offering here for a while, but he would put all the plates outside, be on time, and then, you know, just before the pujari is about to take the offering into the offer, rather than the Gornitai and Jagannath Balaram Subhadra, then Korma would pay his full obeisances on the veranda. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pushpaya Bhukade. And you know, he was offering everything basically to Krishna. So when we put all of that effort into offering it to Krishna, then those who come and take the remnants of the prasadam, they feel the potency. You feel the potency of the prasadam. Basically, it's the same activity. We're cooking a meal and then we're eating it. You know, there's not a lot of difference between what we do and what somebody next door does. But that simple act of cooking in the mood of it's being for Krishna's pleasure and then actually making the offering itself then imbues the food with spiritual potency, spiritual power. And that then purifies. So similarly also, our so-called material activities, if they're done in a mood of sacrifice as an offering to Krishna, then the end result of those activities, even though it may be going to work or, you know, our family commitments and responsibilities, if they're done with the proper mentality of offering them to Krishna and giving the results to Krishna, then rather than having an entangling consequence, that actually liberates us. So the same thing, basically. But it's the mentality that's different. That's what the Vedas encourage us to do. Yes, yes, get married. Enjoy your family life. But before you do, follow this regulation, follow that regulation, follow the other regulation. Right? Just push. So it's not very difficult to do, actually. The minor inconvenience, some small inconveniences, or some big inconveniences, maybe, but with a spiritual benefit. And of course, material benefit will already be there. You know, like Prabhupada says, Krishna's feeding the ant. And what does he need? He just needs a grain of sugar every day. Or maybe half a dozen grains of sugar. And the elephant. You know, an elephant has to eat a ton of grass every day. You know, when I worked at the Adelaide Zoo, there was an elephant there called Shimon. And they used to bring a truck in from the veggie market, and it had a half a ton of cabbage leaves, you know, and that was the elephant's breakfast. So Prabhupada made a point, you know, the ant's getting his 6 grains of sugar and the elephant's getting his tons of grass. So, and this is all by Krishna's arrangement, so why won't Krishna look after his devotees? And then Prabhupada talks about the gorillas. He talks about the gorillas who like eating nuts that are as tough as bullets. He said the gorillas get their favourite food. Nuts. That nobody else can chew, but they like it. Hard as bullets. So, you know, Krishna's arranging for everybody. We think, oh, if I sacrifice something for Krishna, will I get looked after? Well, of course. Krishna will make the arrangements for his devotees to be maintained, to be looked after. Especially if they sacrifice everything for him. Maybe some inconvenience, some austerities may be there. But Krishna arranges those austerities and those inconveniences basically for the purification of the devotees. And he, and Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, I carry what they lack and I maintain what they already have. So these sacrifices, if you like, are designed in such a way so that the ultimate benefit is given to the devotees. Maybe some little material inconvenience, but what comes about as a result of that material inconvenience is spiritual advancement. And the spiritual advancement is the most valuable commodity. Cannot be easily acquired, actually. And so therefore, you know, the Vedas are designed in such a way to encourage us so that we become attached to performing the sacrifice, basically, rather than the sense gratification that might come about as a result of the sacrifice. We're encouraged to become attached to the sacrifice, because the sacrifice leads us to transcendental knowledge, and that's the real benefit. To come to, you know, a realization, pratyaksavagamandamyam shushukam pratamadiyam, to come to the realization that I'm not this body, that I'm a spirit soul, that I have a relationship with Krishna, that I'm Krishna's servant, and that acting in my constitutional position is what really makes me happy and satisfied. This is the real purpose of sacrifice. So, interesting. The words rojanata phalashruti clearly indicate that the fruitive results promised in the Vedic literature are meant to stimulate a materialistic person to have faith in the Vedic injunctions. Hmm. And it's interesting, actually, when I think about it. When Prabhupada was encouraging the devotees to preach, he was saying, here's how we preach to people. We have kirtan, right, which is singing and dancing, which is basically enjoying, having fun, right? And we feed them prasadam. This is the beginning of our, this is the basic preaching strategy, right? When you go to the temple, all you do is have fun. Then when people are comfortable and, happy in this atmosphere, then we give them philosophy. Right? We give them some philosophy. Not too much philosophy that we scare them away. But it's interesting that, we first of all give some allurement, if you like, some enticement. Here, come and have some fun, chanting and dancing. And then when you're tired of dancing and chanting, have something to eat. And as we discussed the other day, Prabhupada's love feasts, which was, in one sense, was the beginning of preaching within ISKCON. Then Prabhupada made huge, hugely extravagant feasts. Samosas, sweet rice, kachoris, sabjis, puris. Gulab jamans. They even call them ISKCON bullets. And I mentioned this the other day, the devotees were bewildered because they thought spiritual life is meant to be austere, and here Prabhupada is filling us all up with prasadam and saying, eat more, eat more, eat more. Then he gives a little bit of philosophy. Sweetly presented, when we speak, we should speak in such a way so that it is the truth, but it should be spoken in a palatable fashion so that people take it.
It should be beneficial.
Yeah, beneficial, that's right, yes, beneficial. And pleasing to the ear. Until one becomes serious, then. Give him the sauce. And this is what we were discussing yesterday. One of Prabhupada established temples with opulent deity worship and with opulent prasadam so that people would be attracted. Right? And then, then we give them some transcendental knowledge, some transcendental literature. Especially in, actually I can see it now, all of the people coming to the Sunday feast for the next 4 weeks. they're gonna be dodging the Bhagavad Gita's. They'll have Aravind and his crowd. The kids will all be walking around. The parents will be standing there with the Bhagavad Gita. All the other devotees will be standing there with the Bhagavad Gita. I think, what's going on here? We do need to be a little sympathetic to people who have already got 6 copies of the Bhagavad Gita. Of course, that's not a bad thing. We can encourage them to give them to their friends. Huh? Sastradharam. Giving transcendental knowledge. And of course, that's really what it's all about, in one sense. It's giving people a proper understanding of things as they are. That's our business, actually. Even though initially we may encourage people You know, the Vedas may entice people, get this material benefit, get that material benefit. Well, first of all, do this little austerity. So in the beginning, you know, we offer people some enticements. Come to the temple, see the deities, you know, be inspired, take prasadam, become purified. Now, you know, understand what is the real purpose of human life. And, you know, then what are the responsibilities that come with that? Right? So those things we may not reveal to people initially. So there's a little bit of, what should we say, trickery, is it? Trickery? Transcendental trickery. Huh? But ultimately it's all for the benefit. It's for the benefit of the people. And some austerity. What is it? The mature platform of Vedic understanding is mentioned in the Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad. Tam ektam vidanuvachanena ramana vividishanti brahmacharjena tapasa swadaya jagyena shakena cha. So what have we got here? We've got brahmacharya. Huh? Brahmacharya. It's recommended. Nobody likes to hear that word, brahmacharya. Ooh. Austerity. Tapasa. Jagya. Sacrifice. Huh? But this is the real purpose. By the teaching of the Vedas and by celibacy, penances, faith, and controlled eating, great brahmanas came to know the Supreme. Huh? By these activities. This is how we get to be elevated to transcendental knowledge. So in the beginning, chanting and dancing and feasting, but in the end we get a little bit more serious. Huh? I think I might finish it. Does anybody have any comments or questions? Marathon, we're actually going to change the morning program a little bit, so I think usually it means we have Guru Puja before greeting the deities, and then straight after greeting the deities we'll have a class, and then that means then that the devotees will go out earlier. Those who are going to be doing book distribution will be going out earlier in the night, but I think, I'm not quite sure, but I think on the weekends we'll probably keep it the same, because there's no real benefit in getting out early on the weekend. Does anybody have any questions about book distribution? Everybody know where they're going to get their books from? Yes? Yep, know all of that. Okay, good. You know how much to sell the books for? That's important. Basically what we try to get double the cost of the book. Cost of the book being what the BBT charges us, and then the freight cost, which is a few cents, but we should add that in so that we're making some money. Well, okay. All the best. Gandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki
jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Gaura Bhaktavinda ki jai.